Hey, this is James from ShroudPub.com. Sorry for the delay, the two-week gap in episodes. Mike was on vacation. I have had a sore throat, so I've been hacking up lungs and too sore to even talk, especially on a solo show, as you can hear. So Mike will be back this next week. I'm going to do a short episode today on Camping Basics Part 1. You'll probably have to wait 2 weeks before Camping Basics Part 2 comes out. So, you know, I had some friends ask me some questions about, you know, basic camping stuff, making a fire, whatnot. And so probably we probably will have a Survival Punk sort of camp out thing this year, even if like one person shows up or whatever, you know, and have some like hands-on skill stuff. Some, you know, this is how you make a fire, because some people just don't know how to make a fire. And I'm sure you guys mostly do. Some people don't. So I didn't until I started making fires, you know, the nuances of, you know, making a campfire. So who knows? We might have that. So we're going to talk about that stuff today. No preamble, no jibbly jabbly. We'll have fun when Mike comes back this next Wednesday. I just didn't want you guys to go 3 weeks without an episode, because that's fucking ridiculous. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, but sick and all. So, Camping Basics. And I'm certainly no expert by any means, but I have gone camping. I have gone sort of more primitive camping, some backyard camping, some hikes with camping. So I have a little bit of experience. So when I talk about camping, I sort of break that down to three categories. So you have your backyard camping, you know, either in your yard or friend's yard, basically where you have a house close by that you can go to. And, you know, as kids, this is what a lot of you do. You know, you camp in your backyard, you know, your dad, your mom or whatever takes you camping in the backyard. You put up a little tent, you know, you sleep in your treehouse or whatever. Next, you've got the camping areas like the KOAs or whatever, which for me, the only thing I think they're good for is as a cheap hotel room. Like you go check in when you're, you know, traveling so you don't have to spend all that money on a hotel room. And even them get sort of expensive, but, you know, it can work for that. I've got to the point where I like rest stops better. But anyway, so you have your camping areas like that. Some of them are a little bit better, some of them a little bit worse. You know, you get amenities, you get like, you get power poles to plug in your electronics or whatever, or your RV. You get, some of them you get showers and, you know, whatnot. And it's, I guess it's, you know, not in a house, so it's kind of camping, but, there's that. We won't even focus on that a whole lot, really. And then you got your backwoods camping, which is where you have to hike into a location. So it's not car camping. It's not, which is kind of why I consider the camping areas like car camping, where you have to backpack in all of your stuff and you're not like unloading from the car and walking back and forth. And there's a picnic area. There's probably a shitty like grill or whatever. This is sort of the, you know, the more extreme, like, I kind of would rather people start with backyard camping. Maybe go to like car camping, you know, definitely go to car camping, maybe go to the camping areas, like, some are a little bit better where you park your car, but then you have to walk a fair distance and it's more secluded, you know, different places, different things. I'm not a fan of the KOAs unless, like I said, you are just using it as a hotel room, basically, which I did when I went to Texas. I stayed in a campground, like a KOA, I think. Yeah. And then your backwoods camping is what I said. So, we're going to, once again, if you hear me say, you have to take a shot of your, hard liquor and wash it down with bratwurst, Jeff Dimitri. my voice hurts so bad. All right. So so backyard camping, if you're not really experienced with camping, I definitely suggest you start this. I mean, unless you're in an apartment, you probably have some sort of yard. If you are in an apartment, then sure, you have family or friends, you know, that have a backyard, and you can probably even do this together. If you have kids, they'll love doing this too. I'm gonna get with Catch Tail Mike and see if we can do a whole camp with his kids, because I think we have, you know, I'm hammock. I think we have hammocks for the entire family. I gave Mike and his wife, producer Mike's wife, I haven't used that name in a while, hammocks for Christmas. And I think through like hand-me-downs from like review copies that I've had, and like cheap hammocks, they've got I think everyone in the family has a hammock, so that's everybody. Matt, that's a Survival Punk Army member, I'm working on getting you a hammock. I've seen you talking about it, and I think I have a spare review one that I got laying around. If I find it, I'll get your address and send it to you. And sometimes if I get stuff for review, I'll give it away. So if you know companies that need stuff reviewed, shoot them my name, and you know I pass that stuff along occasionally. Especially, dudes, I love hammocks, but when you have, I have almost a hammock addiction. Like, I think I counted that I had 5 hammocks, and I'm sitting in a hammock now. You know, my bug out bag has a hammock. That's my cat, you might really hear in the background. So yeah, anyway, I think the entire family has hammocks, and then we'll, you know, have a fun little roast marshmallows hang out. Maybe do a really cool, like, elaborate, like, you know, hang with all the, yeah. All the hammocks sort of hang up, and I know everyone has seen on Facebook those hammock shelter systems that are like tents that are hammocks. If those things weren't like $900, I'd love to get one. If you make those and you want one for review, send it to jamesrailpunk.com. You know, and like that, go out in your backyard. You'll get some dirt time. You'll get some experience. You can build, hopefully, you know, or in your friend's yard, you can do some campfires and get sort of familiar with making the fires, and I'll sort of go over my methods and some of the things I use on making fire. And then from there, you know, like I said, you can move up to some of the better camping areas for car camping, where you're unloading from your car and you go to your campsite, and then you're more in nature, you're a little bit further away from the stuff. And it's sort of included in that, and I didn't really talk about it, it's not in my show notes or anything, is sort of camping getaways. Like I've gone to a few. Like I've gone to what was that thing called? Rendezvous something? River Cane Rendezvous. It's a primitive skills gathering in Georgia. Which is really fun. Like I liked it there a lot. A bunch of dirty hippies, but they were cool dirty hippies. And I learned a lot of good stuff there. I think I met like a couple, like one or two other survivalists. I got to forge some stuff. That's what I drank. There's beer around, and it was a fun time. And that's sort of another way to like get out there and get some skills. And you know, you'll learn while you're there. You'll get some sort of group camping stuff. It's fun. It's worth trying. And then you know, there's always more experienced people, so you can sort of bounce things back and forth, which is nice. And you still have sort of a safety blanket, but not with some of their stuff, and you get an education. So I like it. When you're really comfortable with sort of car camping and backyard camping, you can move on to the backwoods camping, which you know, here in Tennessee, you need like a backwoods camping permit. It's like a couple bucks or something. And, some of the parks here, like, Cedars of Lebanon and stuff, like we talked to the park rangers, me and some other buddies, another James and Mike that used to have Survival website, and the rangers are totally cool about you just kind of hiking a little off trail, setting up camp and you know going, as long as once again you need like a fire permit and like a backwoods permit. And then you know we have Appalachian Trail down in the corner, so lots of places that you can do backwood camping. I've read, and I don't have like a website that I can give you, but there's guerrilla camping, which is where you can scout out and find like either unused land or just good places where you won't be noticed. So you can sort of like, you know, pull off and hide and camp. Your mileage may vary. Some of these situations you are trespassing, you could be shot. You could go to jail. Take that into consideration. I've not done it. But some people have success with it. And, you know, there's places where, like, there are people that have camped out for years around, the Grand Canyon. And there's like a whole little, like sort of hobo areas there. So, you know, might not be as bad. And you know, there's places like that. So, if you want to be off grid. So once you've decided that you want to camp and that you're going to get into it. And like I said, probably should start in your backyard because you can do that like on a weekend or an overnight or something. We're gonna tackle three parts of camping in this Camping Basics Part 1, and that is shelter, fire, Oh, just fire, shelter and fire. We're covering two things. I might go a little long on the fire. And my throat is hurting. Not to bitch too much or whatever. It's like gravel. It's like I'm bleeding, whatever. So shelter. I'm gonna break this down to like four ways you can go. We're gonna start with natural. I don't suggest you start with this. When you have a little experience, you can build yourself up to this. The last time I went natural camping, where I built a lean-to, which is where you're going out and you're building your shelter from nature with minimal thing. Like I used nothing, actually. I'd say you could use like cordage or something to tie logs, but I made a lean-to and I used no cordage. I just leaned the, sort of a Y-shaped branch up against another tree. You wedge it in there, and then I laid some other trees on it, and then I built up, debris litter over it. Like I said, last time I did that, I got a bug bite that got infected. Then I ended up with a MRSA boil, and then I had an allergic reaction to the pills they gave me for the MRSA boil, which didn't make me break out in hives. And then I had, like, weird cold sweats, like, be weary. Be weary of primitive shelter. Like, wear a good bug screen to bed. But, yeah. I don't know, and it was fun, though. It was fun, except for the bug bites that got infected and almost killed me. But I survived. So natural, obviously you're building your shelter from materials. You can use some of the stuff that you bring in, like cordage. When you step up to, like, using tarps, I kind of move that away. Like, you can still, like, partially build your shelter and use your tarp to sort of amp up your natural shelter. And that's sort of, like, the next category is using tarps. Like, some people, they'll just go out with just their tarp, and they'll build a shelter, they'll make a roof. They'll sometimes use it as a ground liner, to block the wind and to sort of, block the ground a little bit. I've done natural before. I've never really been a tarp person, which is, some people are diehard tarp people. I'm not. I'm just not a tarp person. Some people are, and you can get kind of geeked out watching YouTube videos and watching some of these elaborate tarp setups. Like, I saw one guy, can't remember who it is on YouTube. He, I think he had a, one guy had a motorcycle, and he tied off a couple points of his tarp to the motorcycle and then ran their parts down. He built a shelter around his vehicle. Pretty cool. Next up, we have tent, and that can go a whole wild range. Like, they make tents that have like the same square footage of my tiny house. Ridiculously, which is pretty crazy. Some of that you start getting away from like real camping into like basically a little house there. That's just the way some people are. They want to go out to nature and then separate themselves from nature. Whatever, to each their own. I have been in a smaller tent before. The Eureka Solo, I think. Eureka. I have a Eureka hammock, which is a one-person backpacking tent, which is the only tent that I still own. I've not had that thing out in forever, actually. Because I had it, and then I took a couple trips with it. Not bad, but I'm not a fan of sleeping on the ground, which is why I moved to hammocks. So that was a good tent to have. It's backpackable, which is something you got to consider when you're getting your shelter. Some of these, like I said, these like big, like, 6-man, 7-man, 10-man tents or whatever. You're going to go in with, you're either car camping and you're bringing it from the car not that far, or you're backyard camping and you're carrying it from your house out to yard, setting it up. You're not going to be carrying in like a 6-man tent, by yourself. You're just not, for something like that. And all your other gear. That's basically, you're going to be hating yourself if you're hiking that in, 6 miles or whatever. That's when, if you have a 6-man tent, obviously you're going to have probably not 6 people, but a couple people, and one person will be almost dedicated job of carrying the tent. And, you know, food and stuff will go to someone else, and then you'll split up some stuff. That's a lot, though. That's a lot. That's why I like the sort of one-two-man tents, especially for, like, bug-out bags or, like, you know, solo camping adventures. They're not super bad, and some of the... Price-wise, the tents are where you can really get hit in the pocket pretty badly. Especially the smaller sort of ultralight ones, they get ridiculously expensive, like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And if you're looking for like a four-season one, a two-person four-season ultralight, that gets ridiculously expensive. So good luck with that. I think my Eureka, and this was several years ago. I think it was like $120, somewhere around there. Not terrible. And that was for a one-man backpackable tent. So you're thinking two-person, it gets a lot more expensive. And I've seen people on like survival forums, they'll get like the cheap children's tent from like Walmart, and they'll sleep diagonally. And it's fairly light, you know, probably 3 pounds, 4 pounds, will fit in a backpack, especially if you take out some of the packaging material in the hammock container. And, you know, it's like diagonal, it's like 6-something, 7 feet, so you can sleep in it, and it works. And, you know, that's probably under $40. So there's options if you want to do that. That would be one. Other than that, the cheaper tents tend to be bulkier, and that's what you're losing. So if you're gonna go with a cheaper tent, you're gonna look at it being bigger and bulkier and heavier. So you're sort of confining yourself more to backyard and car camping, whereas the more expensive, you know, ultralight, lighter tents, you're gonna pay more. I mean, that's just the way it is. The solution to that, my friends, is the hammock. The hammock, as some of you may know, is my preferred camping shelter system. It doesn't hurt your back. That's what I love. Sleeping on the ground sucks balls, guys. It sucks. I hate, like, and then again, you fall into the thing. Like, if you're going to sleep on the ground, you're going to need a mattress. You know, sort of like closed cell foam mat. You're going to need something. And then you're dealing with, like, I don't even like super fluffy and comfortable, but a little bit. And I just wasn't happy. I just wasn't happy. Ever sleep on the ground. With hammocks, I mean, you can still use your closed cell foam mat. It tends to slip around, and it limits sort of the comfortability, which is why some people tend to say that a hammock is like a 3-season, maybe even 2-season shelter system. Where if you get under quilt, then, you know, you easily take it in the 4 seasons. I even have a poncho liner, military poncho liner, that I've rigged up like paracord to, and a ridge line on my hammock, and I use that as an under quilt, and it works. For most, it works down to about freezing temperatures here in Tennessee. If you go more than that, you're probably going to want a real, you know, a real legit underquilt, you know, out of, you know, down or something. But, you know, there's people DIY them, and because they kind of get it expensive. I'm rambling because I love hammocks, guys. I'm rambling on. But yeah, you know, to take the hammock into like the true 4-season, you're gonna need to spend a little bit extra money with like an underquilt or DIY it. And depending on where you're at, you really might need a better underquilt. If you're in the South, you can probably get away with something like you know, a blanket that you rig up, you know, like the poncho liner that I use, which is good, and it's camouflaged, so you know it kind of blends in a little bit in the woods. And there's several varieties of hammocks. I mean, I use a Trek Light hammock, as my couch. And, for my sort of spring summer camping outside, I have a Hennessy asymmetrical zipper because it has a built in bug net, and it sleeps so good. Like the asymmetrical design of it is, it's like you're laying sideways, like you should in a normal hammock. So if you don't know, when you sleep in a hammock, some people tend to think, like, I don't know, they see on TV or something where, like, it's like a banana, like, you crunch up, and they're like, oh, that would hurt my back, that would be terrible. No, you fools, you don't lay like that. You turn yourself, you cock yourself at, like, a 45-degree angle. You like, plant your feet in one corner of the hammock, and then diagonal your head in the other corner, and it flattens out the hammock to where, like, you can even sleep sideways. Because you got to think, if you're laying in the, like, banana style, you know, like, in the middle, straight across, if you try to turn on your side, you're going to, like, snap your spine in half. Not going to happen, dudes. So, you lay at that 45-degree angle, and you're comfy, and it's amazing. With the Hennessy, you can lay flat across like you would normally, you know, like you would in a bed or something, or like the way you think you should lay in a hammock. And instead of bananaing you out, it pulls... sort of, it creates tension on the asymmetrical design, you know, on the corners, like you would be at a 45-degree angle while laying straight. So you can, like, roll around in it. It's insane. Like, it doesn't look like it is, but when you're in it, it just sort of pulls diagonally, and it's just really comfortable. Especially if you got it set up right, it's amazing. Highly recommend the Hennessy hammock. It's a complete set. They could do something with the rigging. It's basically just a rope coming off of it, and with tree straps. It's stupid. It needs to be done something. Something like the Enos and stuff that you can get everywhere, and like the Trek lights, they have slap straps that you can, like, adjust. Highly recommend that, especially for, like, you know, nighttime camping. I'm wanting to upgrade the Hennessy to a useful system that, like, whoopee slings. So you basically just slap them on there and then, like, pull the cord, and it'll only go in one way until you loosen it up, and then you sort of straighten it out and then tie it, and then when you're done, you just let the slack back out. Pretty neat little design. They're not super expensive. I don't know why I haven't ordered them. Ridiculous. Or even got the Amsteel cord and made my own, which I should do. I need the kick in the ass. I need to order it, and I just need to do it. Fuck. Hammocks. And you can see I'm going longer on the hammocks because I love a hammock. It is the way to camp, my friends. No back problems. You're not on the ground. You're not on the ground with the animals. If you're in bear country, I guess kind of scary. Getting out of a hammock, especially like the Hennessy with the zipper on it. If you're getting attacked by a bear, you're probably going to want to, like, whip out your pocket. You're probably going to want to have a pocket knife in there and cut your way out. Or have a gun in there and shoot the bear, you know, but, you know, as far as, like, bugs crawling on the ground, you know, ground critters, the hammock is way better. Snakes are not going to get you in a hammock. In a tent, they might, who knows? You know, and bugs might get in there, who knows? You know, like, waterfall, you know, the ground, you know, your tent might get flooded. Not in the hammock, guys, not in the hammock. So, buy a fucking hammock. That's the end. Let's move on to fire, because I'm getting worked up and my voice is starting to hurt. And I'm at the 30-minute mark, and that's about all I wanted to do. Oh, excuse me. There's 17 million ways to make a fire. We're not going to focus on the 17 millions. This is camping basics, not camping extreme. So I'm going to say, make your fires with a lighter. Go to the store, buy a Bic. Or get those cheap lighters, but get, like, seven times as many of them. Go to, like, the Dollar Tree. Like Serenity says,
the Dollar Tree has it.
Go to the Dollar Tree and get a pack of, like, 10 lighters for a dollar. Because those things tend to fail. Not like the Bics, which last longer, because they're Bics. And that's going to be your lighter. That's the way that you should start, like, that's the easiest, quickest way to make fire. There's no reason not to have it. You should have one in your pocket. I keep one on my lighters. I don't smoke, but I keep a lighter with me all the time. In all my bug out bags and all my get home bags stashed in my car, there are lighters everywhere. It's just the easiest, quickest way to make fire. There's no reason. I mean, making friction fire is fun to a degree until you blow your hands out and then you're bleeding everywhere. And that sucks, guys. Making fire with ferro rod, super fun. You should have a few of them. There's no reason not to, and especially when you're practicing and getting used to stuff, there's no reason not to. But have a lighter. because it's easy. And sometimes when you're in an emergency, you don't want to fuck around. You just want to fire. So get a lighter, practice with it, make fires with a lighter, get used to it, know it. I guess it. The other way to make fire is a ferro rod, or a magnesium block with a ferrocerium rod embedded in it. You scrape it, it shoots sparks. It'll make a spark-based fire. You're going to need a tender to accept that fire. You're not going to just like sit down your wood, your logs or whatever, and start scraping ferro rod on them. If you've got the magnesium block, you know, you can get it like any sporting goods store, you know, camping store or whatever. You scrape that magnesium block off. You get the scrapings from it. They burn at a high temperature. That's your tender. We're not even going to talk about that because that's not in my list of tender things. But yeah, that is it. It burns at a high temperature. It's good in wetter environments. I can't fault you for having one of those. The problem with those is the ferrocerium rod tends to be lacking. So if you had that with another ferrocerium rod, or like I said, you had a fucking lighter, no big deal. You got it. And those come in several varieties. You can get those Kodiak sticks are kind of shitty. Wouldn't recommend you get one of those. Bad reviews. I can't fault you for having a few of those like magnesium block rods, like I said. A good sort of light my fire or whatever. Like I said, it's really good when you're getting a ferrocerium rod. Bigger is better. The thicker the rod, the more sparks you can throw because it is a limited thing. I've not ever ran out of one, but I'd hate to use one up during an emergency. The flints get. I've had them run out on like lighters before, where you just use the lighters so much there's no flint left. So they're obviously a lot smaller, but it happens. And I've had some of the tiny ones, and they can run out. It happens, you know. So and then sort of lastly on the ferrocerium rod, they make a one-handed strike blast match. They're really good, especially for one-handed use. You can just sort of push it down and it throws the sparks in a very controlled way, which is really good. And that's good. Like if you are in an accident and you have to, you know, use one hand to make fire, using a regular ferrocerium rod is kind of hard. You might have to like finagle it and hold it with your toes or something. And lastly, on the ferrocerium rods, sort of a quick tip I picked up from, I think, Dave Canterbury, is I know a lot of people, when they get a ferrocerium rod in their knife or their striker stick or whatever, they, when they're throwing the sparks, they tend to hold the ferrocerium rod tight, you know, in place, and take the knife and sort of scrape down it, throwing the sparks. The problem with this, and I've seen it happen, is you're moving a bladed instrument that could hurt you around. It can slip off the ferrocerium rod, slap into your tender, knock it flying. You've just fucked yourself. And it's not really, it doesn't really throw the sparks in a controlled manner. It's because it's sort of wobbly and it doesn't put them in the same place every time. A better idea is to lock out your hand with a knife in it at the right angle, right above your tender, so that it's right there. Take your ferrocerium rod and drag back across it, and it's going to deposit those sparks right there in a controlled area where you want them. It's just better and easier and safe. There's no telling, like, I mean, I've not seen anyone get really hurt using a knife like that to throw sparks, but someone will fucking do it. They'll somehow lose a damn finger, so why not just eliminate that whole thing right there? Like, lock out your knife hand, draw the ferrocerium rod across it. Fast, easy, fire. So that's the way I suggest you do it. Lastly, friction fire. They're tough. They're fucking hard as hell. You're not going to go out there on your first time camping and knock out friction fire. One, you're going to need to assemble your kit. Going out and building a friction fire kit the same day you're going to use it, probably not going to work, guys. Sorry. It's cool. It looks good. You can talk about it and people will be impressed by it, because not everybody can make friction fire anymore. Cavemen could. That's how you're here. Otherwise, we would have been dead, and Neanderthals or fucking Cro-Magnons or would be here. But they're not. We are. So you're going to need to assemble your kit. Dry it out. Make sure it works. Be sure about the wood that you have. The right hardness. The right consistency. And you just have to practice it. I mean, it's like learning a new skill. You're going to have to practice this. Building a fire with a ferrocerium rod or lighter, I can teach you that in minutes. No problem. Friction fire, it's going to take practice. You're not going to get it right off the bat. The bow drill is easier. There's a chance you could go out and get a bow drill to work one day. Getting a hand drill to work the same day, you basically need all the gods of the universe to smile and bless you. So good luck with that, guys. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason that why you shouldn't go out, assemble your kit, and then just try it. I've got my kit assembled, and I give it the old college try every once in a while. I mean, just for practice, you should always practice it. With making fire, next is sort of tinder selection. I've got my go-to methods. I started out years ago using Vaseline soaked cotton balls. So you'd get Vaseline and you'd melt it in a big bowl, throw in a whole bunch of cotton balls, and just douse them in there, just roll them around, get them to soak in all the fibers, and then I store them in I store them in film canisters. So it's a little bit harder to find now than it used to be, with not every place doing film developing. But, you know, like Walgreens and stuff, you can still ask them to get, you know, a canister or two. And you just stuff them in there, and you've got several, you know, tinders stuffed in there. I've moved away since then from Vaseline-soaked cotton balls to coconut oil-soaked cotton balls. You get coconut oil, you melt it, you put it in a bowl. You have to work a little bit faster because it congeals at room temperature. You soak them in there, you stuff them into your container, whatever you have. So, I guess some people use empty pill bottles. That works too. You can find different little sort of like containers or whatnot. But those are the top two, and you know, they're good ones to have. And I moved to coconut oil for multiple purposes. Like you can use it for your cracked lips, the coconut oil. You can use it for... if you're cooking, you can use the coconut oil in your coconut oil balls to sort of, you know, grease up your cooking thing. Like if you have a rock or something you want to cook on the rock, you can grease up the rock, heat it up. It has multiple uses. There are calories in it. It's an additional way to carry some calories. And with coconut oil, fairly dense, medium chain triglyceride calories, which will help you get into ketosis. And if you have to go hungry for a long time, double whammy, good. So coconut oil soaked cotton balls, and it burns longer. So at this point, if you just happen to have some Vaseline soaked cotton balls, more power to you. It's a fucking awesome it's an awesome tinder. But from now on out, I would say make it coconut oil. There's no all benefits, no negatives. Burns better. You can use it for all sorts of things. So coconut oil. Commercially, you can buy wet fire tinder. I've seen videos of it floating on water and still burning. And I guess there's no reason why I would say not to just throw some cubes in your bug out bag, your camping kit that you're building or whatnot. It's not terribly expensive. I think for like $9 or so, you can get a pack of it. You know, and at camping supply stores and stuff, you can find, you know, other things like trioxane and Esbit, and you can make stuff or whatever, but I would say start with your coconut oil and get used to it. Use that a lot. And then when you advance more, you can assemble natural kit to build your fire with. So things like, you know, birch bark, you can shred the bark off of it. I've used cedar bark really successfully. You can find chaga mushrooms, tinder fungus, in I think northern parts of the United States. I don't believe we have them here in the South. I could be wrong. I've not really came across them, and I've not heard a lot from them being in the South, but it could happen. And with that, though, you need some preparation. You have to, like, dry it out before it's useful. You can make ahead of time or in there. If you have cloth, which, you know, cotton cloth, which you should, You can burn it in the absence of oxygen to make char cloth. I had brain fart there for a second, guys. I'm tired. So char cloth, and that'll take a spark really well and help you make a fire. On making the fire, we went through that pretty fast. And a friend asked me, that they had no idea how to even like make a fire. Go out and assemble all of your things to build a fire before you ever even like start to make your fire. Get the tiniest twigs, you know, and move up in size and up in size and up in size until you have, you know, logs or bigger branches or whatnot. You know, like tiny, smaller than a pencil, smaller than your finger, sort of like loose wires, like the smallest twigs you can find. Get handfuls of them. And then just sort of move up, like, so just assemble your all of your little twigs and stuff, and then separate them out so you have like the little ones, the bigger ones. There's different ways to do it. I'm a fan of the teepee, so I'll take those little twigs and I'll start building a teepee with them, and then on the outside I'll have bigger twigs and then bigger twigs, and then, you know, I sort of end up with a teepee with probably branches about the size of my thumb, so maybe an inch, you know, maybe an inch on the outside, a couple of them, not as many as like your inside, and that's like sheltered on three quarters of it. So you have like a teepee, you have like a little notch in the front, going up fairly high, you know, with air going in, and then the backside of it's, you know, covered in as much as, you know, your twigs. You're not packing them super dense or anything, and inside of that you would put your, you know, your coconut oil, Vaseline soaked cotton balls, and I reserve a couple of those tiniest little twigs or another tender material, you know, dry grass or something. Reserve that and then sort of feed onto it until the flames rise up. And with coconut oil, you've got, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes of burn time. So you've got plenty of time in dry conditions to get that fire going. And then as it gets hotter and it starts to raise the combustion temperature on those twigs on the inside of your teepee, they'll catch fire. They'll start burning, your tinder will still be burning, and it'll start to catch and dry out those bigger twigs on the outside. And by the time that your outside thumb thickness branches are going, your teepee will start to collapse, which is okay, because you have a reserve of, you know, other thumb size thicker or, you know, even bigger branches and logs that you can start putting on top of it to build your basic coals. I don't know, I had an accent there for a second, guys. I'm like, oh no, Jeff Dimitri. And then, you know, by the time you just keep feeding it. Like the first few minutes is sort of, you know, sort of hectic, sort of like, you know, you're nurturing it, you know, you're sort of blowing on it, you're trying to get it to go. By the time that your entire teepee is up in flames and you're putting the bigger stuff on, it's not as, you know, sort of scary. It's, you know, it's more, you got a fire at that point, and then it's just, you know, you keep feeding it so it doesn't die out. But at that point, you're pretty good. You've got fire. Congratulate yourself. You just need to keep feeding it. And that's, you know, that's how I build a fire. I've not done it, but I've read about it, and I believe this summer I'm gonna give it the old college try, guys. The upside down fire looks like another amazing method to build long self-sustaining fires. They're incredibly easy, which is something that I like here. Easy and effective. So with this, you would start with your biggest like logs, you know, at first, and say you take two logs, you push them together, two, you know, a couple smaller logs, you put them on top, you build from the bottom to the top with the biggest logs on the bottom, you know, going down and down and down in size until you're like, you know, stacking kindling. And as you get to those top couple layers, you want there to be as little gap in between them as possible. So touching each other, sort of interlocked, as close and tight as possible. And then at the top, you know, you get some smaller size kindling until you've got some like shavings of like, you know, sawdust that you're shaving off a branch. Maybe some shavings, because it's like some curls. And then your tinder on top, and it'll burn from the top down to the bottom, feeding the fire as it goes, and you kind of have like a set amount, like you have that much, it's going to burn that long. It doesn't need a lot of maintenance because it has the material already there. It's, in theory, It seems really good. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, especially camping and stuff, but so that'll work. I mean, if you're backyard camping, you can fucking get a log, get a chainsaw, and then just, start the fire in there. Another thing I'm gonna do, me and Mike are gonna shoot video of this. I saw a video of a guy that took a drill bit and drilled sort of a J-tube shape inside of a log and made it into a rocket stove. He started like some shelter, some kindling in there, some tinder. And then it just self-sustaining burned out the log. So I thought that was really cool. And that would, I mean, a big enough log that would burn for a while. And it didn't even, I mean, with the rocket stove sort of design going, it looked like once you started it, which was really easy, you just throw some coconut oil soaked cotton ball in there. It looked like it basically would just sort of take off fairly quickly. So that looked like something fun to try. So yeah, that's Camping Basics Part 1, guys. I hope you enjoyed this wonderful solo show without Couch Potato Mike. And I still almost hit a fucking hour. 45 minutes. 45 minutes is just me talking by myself. Have you guys killed yourself? Ooh, I hope not. So with that, this has been an episode of Survival Punk Solo with the James. I hope you guys had a good time. This is James Sicklin Burnett from the Survival Punk Podcast. DIY to go camping, guys. Use guys.